Fan on Demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Special guests on the show today, Luke Harris, who's a competitor on the Ultimate Fighter Nations 14 Canada at middleweight. We'll also hear from Mitch Clark, who will be taking on Al Iaquinta, who we will also be hearing from a little bit later on in the show, as well as Sean Pearson, as a special occurrence happened in the Punisher's life earlier this week, and I had a chance to catch up with him live at the event, and we'll play that little interview I had with him for the latest and greatest in his career, and some interesting news coming out of that interview. We'll get to the other three guys as well in a moment's time, but I'll bring you up to speed on some quick news, some housekeeping items. As we all know, the Ultimate Fighter China finale took place last week in Macau. If you missed it, it was on Fight Pass only. It did not air on Sportsnet, but you can check it out on Fight Pass. I mean, I'm one of those advocates of Fight Pass. It's $9.99 for a guy like me. It's absolutely a great investment, and I get to go back and watch all the old fights as well as all the new ones that are coming up. I do understand there are many fans out there that, you know, don't like it yet, don't understand it, don't want it, think it's a ripoff. I understand that. I completely do. It's not for everybody, and that's what I think people need to understand. It's not for everybody, and just because it's not for you, it doesn't mean that it sucks. There are people that absolutely love it and absolutely enjoy it. So to each their own. And I mean, that's always been my theory. To each their own. If you like it, great, get it. If you don't, you know, hopefully one day you will. And if you don't, you know what, just watch UFC Central, listen to this podcast, watch the television show, follow me on Twitter at Showdown Joe, and I'll try and bring you the latest and greatest from all these events that you can see on Fight Pass or that you don't see on Fight Pass, and we'll bring everyone up to speed as best that I can, as well as my team. Now, for those that weren't able to see the fight between the main event between Dong Young Kim and John Hathaway, an absolutely crazy scrap. It ended in the third round with Dong Young Kim landing a vicious spinning elbow. And as I mentioned on UFC Central, the television side, it just goes to show you what happens when guys become confident in their striking and they end up being fearless, because that's his second win in a row by a knockout. In essence, he took out Eric Silva the last time he fought, and that was in Brazil. So good on Dong Young Kim. And the one thing I did mention, and it's really good, because he's got a plan B. He's got a really good ground game, a very stabilizing ground game. So if he loses any stand-up battle and doesn't get knocked out and the fight ends up going to the ground because his opponent doesn't want to stand with him, fine. You know, he'll do well down there. So good for him. Matt Mitrione was also victorious on the show. He defeated Sean Jordan. I'm not sure that many people were happy with Matt Mitrione's performance as well as the way he looked, physically speaking. But hey, he got the win. He got the win with 1 second left in the first round. Good for him. Two Canadians competed on the show. They were not victorious. Ivan Menjivar, obviously representing the TriStar Gym. He lost to Hatsu Hiyoki in a very spirited affair. This was Menjivar's return to the featherweight division at 145 pounds after competing at bantamweight, but Hiyoki got the better of him for two of the three rounds, and Menjivar did try and come back strong, and it was a really good performance. Both guys were bloodied up and showed a lot of heart, so hopefully Menjivar sticks around with the UFC, but it is getting to the point now where he may have to reevaluate his career, and who knows what the UFC are going to do with him, but hopefully he does get to stick around because he is such an exciting fighter. And of course, Albert Chang from Toronto, he lost in between rounds one and two as his right eye completely swelled shut when he took on Wang Anying, and it was a good welterweight scrap, but Albert Chang will be back. It was tough luck for him because he got hit pretty hard and his eye didn't react. It looked like a broken orbital bone. I didn't have a chance to catch up with him, but hopefully he does come back stronger than ever because he's really good. The one guy that I mentioned via Twitter and on the show on UFC Central that impressed me the most was Von Lee at bantamweight. He took on Nam Pham. This guy looked absolutely fantastic, and for many people, especially overseas in England, where, by the way, the UFC is setting up shop as we speak for Gustafsson versus Manoa, but for many people in England, this is the Von Lee they all wanted to see, and he looked absolutely fantastic. I mean, if you think about the division as a whole, I mean, you got to think a guy like Von Lee is going to start getting a bit of an extra push because, listen, Hayden Barrow doesn't have many challengers left in this division unless Dominic Cruz comes back. And I know there's a bunch of guys that, you know, in the top 10 that are worthy, but No one's talking about them that much. You know, it's not Dominic Cruz or it's TJ Dillashaw. No one's talking about Rafael Assuncao. You know, so a guy like Von Lee has an opportunity here to make make some noise at 135 pounds. So it remains to be seen what he does, but a great performance on the Ultimate Fighter China finale show for Von Lee. Now, speaking of Ultimate Fighters, Luke Harris, one of our Canadian boys out of Alberta, had a very difficult time versus Vic Grulich in his bout on the Ultimate Fighter, but it is what it is, and he joins us right now. Luke, obviously a disappointing performance on the Ultimate Fighter. We got to see it firsthand. First things first, we want to know, how was the injury? How were you feeling? How's your eye and all that?
Oh, you know what? First of all, it was a great experience being there. Obviously, disappointed with the loss. You know, that was a really important fight for me. But injuries were just superficial, and I was fine afterwards. I resumed training probably about 10 days after that, and all's good now.
Now, you take a look at it was definitely a short fight. It looked like, for some reason, you were a little stiffer than normal, and you were waiting for something to happen. Was that the case?
Yeah, definitely I wasn't feeling myself. There's always different circumstances with these fights, especially on a show like that. But, I'm not here to make excuses. A fight's a fight. There's got to be a winner and a loser. Like I said, I wasn't feeling myself, but came out there a little flat-footed. Hands were down, especially when I watch it. And, just wasn't me in there. But, tied up, went for the takedown, and, unluckily, I smashed my head off the canvas with the takedown, and that's really what led to the elbows and stuff. I had a bit of a flash knockout when I hit my head off the canvas. Woke up to getting elbowed. He kind of woke me up with an elbow, and then that's all she wrote.
And you watched the episode. You saw a guy like Olivier Nobel-Mercier. He was really affected by this because he knows you fairly well. And it seems the role thus far on the show is you're almost like a team captain, a leader with the eight guys for Team Canada. What was that like post-fight?
Oh, man, it was definitely hard on the morale of the guys. I mean, I became really close with a lot of the guys. And, really close team, really good guys. And, for me, that's one of the greatest things that came out of the show, just getting to know these guys. I mean, some of these guys are the best, they are the best up-and-comers in Canada. And I mean, these are the names that you're going to see all the time. So it was a privilege to have these guys train with every day.
The one thing that many people don't understand about mixed martial arts is the extreme highs of winning and the extreme lows of losing. What was going through your mind in the days after when you realized, I lost the biggest fight of my career. Is this the end? Or do you look for a silver lining and say, no, this is what we're going to do moving forward?
Oh, yeah, I was pretty disappointed. There's no question about that. But, you have to look at this in perspective. It's a fight, right? It's not like someone died or... something like that. People go through a lot worse adversity. I chose to be there. I fought, it didn't go my well that night, but you followed my career. It's gone pretty well up until that point. And shit happens.
Now you take a look at the actual members on the show and how everything begins to continually unfold there. Walk us through the experience when you first got selected to be on the Ultimate Fighter. You made it to the tryouts, you got selected, and all of a sudden you're in the house with a whole bunch of other alpha males that have one goal in mind. Talk about the experience leading up to this very episode.
Well, yeah, it was pretty wild. For me, I tried out for Tough a bunch of times. So, it was quite a journey. Had to build up my record, all that kind of stuff. And, just to go through the whole process with casting and everything and the tryouts, it was a long process. Flying out to Toronto from Alberta, I run a school, the Hayabusa Training Center in St. Albert, so leaving all my students and everything behind. Newly married this summer, so being away from my wife and family and all that stuff, it was quite the ordeal. But, just such a massive opportunity. It's hard to pass up. Being in that house was, it's very cool. It's what you see, what you see is what you get. But it's, biggest thing I can say is just an amazing opportunity.
You're listening to UFC Central Radio. On the line with us right now is Luke Harris. You can follow Luke online via Twitter at Hayabusa Harris. And obviously you just heard him talk about the gym. So talk about that, running a gym, obviously a member of the Hayabusa crew. So there are things outside of the cage that do keep you busy.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. Like I was saying, I'm newly married. I run the Hayabusa Training Center in St. Albert, Alberta. And, you know, we have lots of up-and-coming fighters. I mean, I have some great fighters coming out of there, some UFC hopefuls, some guys hopefully when they do tough again, that they'll be on there as well. And, you know, Hayabusa Fightwear. So, I mean, I keep my hands pretty busy.
And that clothing line has taken off. Obviously, so there's so many guys that wear the Hayabusa line, and I'm always grateful when I do get my little shipments in here, and it helps me train when I'm sparring with the guys and stuff like that. So it's obviously fantastic stuff. How did the whole Hayabusa thing come together?
Well, basically, it originated. I was living in Montreal at the time, being a judoka. I was, you know, training on the Canadian national team, and just kind of saw an opportunity that you know, there wasn't that much high quality equipment out there. So got together with, you know, some very bright guys who are my business partners, and I mean, came up with the idea, and yeah, we kind of stuck to our guns. Our motto is really to produce the highest quality equipment, and I mean, it's shining through.
Well, for those that don't know, I can never be there's never enough Hayabusa stuff in my gym downstairs. So I absolutely love the quality of the products, and that's so key, because with the wear and tear that people go through whenever they train in mixed martial arts, their equipment just turns to garbage. And I can tell you, I can be firsthand, I can tell you that the Hayabusa stuff is absolutely fantastic. Now, speaking of fantastic, tough to shit. No problem. Tough decisions had to be made, and we didn't get to see it on this episode. I thought for sure we would get a little bit of a glimpse as to what the next matches were going to be, most specifically in that welterweight division, when you have guys like Chad Laprise, Cajun Johnson, and of course, who am I missing here? Olivier Aubin-Mercier. Those three guys, two of them would have to compete. Now, we don't know what they are. What was that like? Because we got a little glimpse of Patrick Cote trying to speak to them and Crew Ash, and surely that must have been a difficult experience for the whole team when the realization came that, you know what, maybe the two of these three have to fight each other.
Yeah, oh, for sure. For me, that was one of the toughest things. I mean, those three guys especially are three of my favorite guys on the show. You know, they're just awesome guys, all very close friends of mine. So, I mean, yeah, two guys fight each other, and I mean, it's you're going to be very shocked about, you know, who they are and then how it goes down. But I mean, you know, what happens then? You know, you got to choose sides almost, or stay out of it. You know, it's a tough decision, especially as a team. You know, the team, what's happening right now, it's becoming fragmented, right? So we're all so tight being Team Canada, and then, you know, Canadians are dominating. So it's become almost back to an original, you know, back to an individual sport. So, I mean, it's tough.
And, of course, you got a guy like Sheldon Westcott, who we saw that was injured on the show. And then that, I mean, is that just the rigors of training mixed martial arts in general? You just never know when the smallest of minute scrambling or exchanges or ground and pound or something like that can get injured. We just saw, you know, Mac Dantzig just called his retirement. He's saying, he's, you know, the concussions that he has suffered over the years in training, not in fighting, are the reason why he's walking out. Can you talk about the dangers in training mixed martial arts, or how you have to be careful nowadays when you're just training with the guys at the gym?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, injuries are a huge, huge factor. I mean, with the case with Sheldon, you know, honestly, I'm not a doctor. I have no idea how serious they are or anything. You know, some guys, I know everyone's injured at this point. You know, some guys, you know, probably play it up a little bit more. I'm not saying he is, but some guys hide it. You know, there's different ways of dealing with it. You know, it's a show, and it's also a competition, right? But I mean, injuries and training, yeah, that's the biggest thing. You're always going to get more injured in training than a fight. I mean, I myself have had ACL surgery. I fractured my orbital at one point. I mean, it's a tough ride. I mean, you got to really love what you're doing to do this sport.
And of course, there are a cast of characters on the show here. And just in general, I mean, I think you and I talked about it one time at one of the expos where I said mixed martial artists, the whole industry, whether it's media or fans, or we're all a bunch of misfits when you think about it. But then you got a guy like Elias Theodoro, and you got a guy like Cajun Johnson, who take it to the next level with their comedic sense, and they're absolutely hilarious. Then you got you on the show, who's basically the big brother. And I wonder how many times you had to just shake your head and almost tell the guys, come on, relax. Or do you just let them go and like let them be who they are?
Oh man, you know, it was hilarious. I was actually surprised to be a little bit to be on the Ultimate Fighter, because yeah, as you know, I'm a little calmer, I'm a little quieter guy. But it's guys like Elias and Cajun were hilarious. I mean, especially like Elias, you know, the guy, he just does not stop talking. I really like both these guys, and I mean, you know, I helped Elias cut weight, and I mean, it's. It's so funny. Most guys, when they cut weight, they get really quiet, you know, really distant, you know, and just sort of focus on that. Elias, he actually talks more. He talks about 10 times more when he cuts weight. It's unbelievable. We had five in our room, and he was like 3 feet away from me the whole time. So, yeah, I got to know Elias pretty well. Pretty good guy.
Are you buying him a muzzle for his birthday?
That's not a bad idea.
Hayabusa muzzle. How's that? Just for Elias.
There you go.
All right.
I know who can promote it.
I'll definitely do that for you. All right. You think there'll be another Ultimate Fighter Canada versus another nation? I think so.
I really do. Yes, I do.
Listen, I want to thank you very much for taking the time with us, and hopefully we get to see you at the Ultimate Fighter finale in Quebec City somewhere, somehow. But other than that, I want to wish you the best of luck with everything Hayabusa related.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
There you have it, Luke Harris. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter at Hayabusa Harris. And we're now joined by his stablemate in Alberta at the Hayabusa Training Center, Mitch Clark, who is taking on Ally Aquinta at UFC 173 Saturday, May 24th at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. All right, Mitch, the last time we saw you compete in the octagon was a while ago. June 2013 was a win over John McGuire. What have you been up to since then?
You know, after that fight, I had injured my back a little bit, had some tearing in my upper back, and I rehabbed that for a bunch of the time, and just was waiting for a call and kept training and getting better, and helped with start the MMA program at a gym here in St. Albert, and now I'm one of the owners, and just getting better and enjoying life.
Now, the difficult part, of course, is that you're in a division that has so much depth and so many things change over a period of time, almost on an event-to-an-event basis. What was that like sitting out there, seeing all these different guys perhaps, you know, move past you in some of the rankings?
Yeah, it's not really a big deal. I don't really fight for rankings. I fight for myself and my team. And, yeah, you know, I don't get a lot of credit, and that's whatever, you know, that's as much as you make out of it, but... you know, more than anything, just looking at guys I think I match up well with, kind of break them down, and with my coaches and staff here in St. Albert, and then just look into who I match up with and how I can kind of preemptively fight them, and more than anything, just get better. You know, it's, the thing is, guys fight so much that they don't take that time in between to really improve their skill set. Their timing gets better. You know, their footwork will get better, their little stuff will get better, but not as fast as when you're actually putting your nose to the grindstone and really actively working on your technique and stuff like that.
Now, the initial thought when this bout was first announced was like, wait a second, Ally Aquinta, he's got a bit more name value than Mitch Clark. And I said, whoa, hold on a second. Don't discount Mitch Clark, because, you know, this is a bad, bad man inside the octagon. Are you surprised that some of the people are saying that? Or the fact is, Ally Aquinta should have got somebody with different name value? Or are you happy the way it is right now?
You know, it's, I think it's a good fight. I can see where they're coming from. He definitely has a lot more name value in terms of, he was on tough, and he's fought more in the UFC, and he obviously has won more. But, you know, he hasn't beaten any, you know, killers, so to speak, you know, and he's always fought at the level of the guys he's fought, I've found, and just a little bit above, just, and he won. But more than anything, you know, I understand where they're coming from, but I was a little bit more, how do I put this? I was a little bit more nervous for the fight with John McGuire because he had a lot of name value. He won submission tonight. I think he had a fight tonight. You know, he's been on the main card. He's fought tough guys at a weight class above me, and he was a known finisher. Ally Aquinta, although he does have, you know, he's got good stand-up power, et cetera, but I think I match up well with him, and I definitely see holes in his game, as I'm sure he sees holes in my game, and I think it's going to be a good fight.
What do you think that says about the UFC matchmaking team, that they have confidence in putting you up against a guy like Al?
I think it says a lot. You know, I'm on a big card with against a good guy, and I think that they know what they're talking about. You know, I think Joe really does his homework and sees kind of, he evenly matches fights. You know, most times you look at on paper, like, oh, this guy's going to blow this guy out of the water and compared to fight. You know, I think the matchmaking staff at UFC really knows what it's talking about.
We're listening to Mitch Clark right now on UFC Central Radio. You can follow Mitch online via Twitter at Mitch Clark MMA. You can follow yours truly at MMA or at Showdown Joe. But one thing about Twitter, to my understanding, Mitch, is according to Twitter, you suck. Now, is that factual, or are you going to deny that?
I think it's a lot of hearsay and conjecture, but you know, I, obviously, I can see where the quote unquote fans come from. Yeah. But, you know, obviously a lot of people are, know Iaquinta, just due to him fighting so much. And, you know, he's an active fighter and, you know, he comes to bring his A game. And, you know, I certainly don't think I suck. The only thing that irritates me is people discredit my last win, which is baloney, since I'm not allowed to use expletives.
And we appreciate that.
Hey, I do my best. But more than anything, you know, I think I can definitely give him a lot of problems, and I definitely plan on coming out on top. You know, I don't train to lose, and I got a great team down in the States that I'm heading away in 10 days to go see them and work with them, and they think I can win. I think I can win.
I'll get to that in a moment, but before we get to back to the serious stuff, one more thing on the side here. Sarah Kaufman, there's been a long-standing feud between you and Sarah Kaufman. Now I have a certain member of your family. We'll call him Rick. I won't say who that is, but we'll call him Rick. He may or may not be your dad. I can't confirm that, but he's now instigating it with me to put you two together on a microphone with me. I don't know where I stand in this. What should I do?
I hope he's not talking about putting him on the microphone. Like I hope my dad is planning to be on a microphone. I think Sarah Kaufman and I would be good for on the air. The problem is a lot of people know Sarah and they don't know me, so they just think I'm a random fan hating on her giant cankles and such. You know, it's just I really like Sarah. She's a great person. She's fun to bug. She gives it back. So you know, I really hope Sarah does well in her next fight. And I enjoyed making fun of her, as I'm sure she enjoyed making fun of me.
Well, I mean, according to your dad, hopefully I can get both of you two in between me and a microphone, and we'll get some good interviews going there. But let's get serious for a moment. You are heading south of the border. To my understanding, will it be at the lab?
Yeah, I'll be at the MMA lab in Glendale.
What is it like training there when you compare it to the training back home? What are some of the differences, both on you know, a good level, bad level? What's the differences?
You know, they're... Not to say that they blow the competition around here out of the water or anything like that. They just have more high-level guys. Like, every gym is going to have some high-level guys, and when you go there, you're going to train with them and get better. That's what I've been working on. Like, at our gym, Complete Fitness, you know, we got a bunch of really good guys in the, you know, Canada standings, you know, Andrew McKinnis, Sheldon Westcott, Shane Campbell comes in, you know, Cody Kahn. We have a list of really good guys. But when I go to the lab, there's a bunch of, like, a dozen high-level guys fighting in Bellator, fighting in UFC, fighting overseas. You know, there's a bunch of really great guys all at my weight class that look to push you. And the other thing is the atmosphere. It has the same atmosphere I have here at my gym is the same as when I go to the lab. It's like a family. Everyone looks out for each other. We all push each other, but we don't look to hurt each other.
All right, there you have it. Mitch Clark will be taking on the man we will hear from after the break, Al Iaquinta, at UFC 173. We'll also hear from Sean Pearson, who experienced a special moment in his martial arts career. And we'll get to that as well after the break. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Shodan Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. And let's not waste any time. We heard from Mitch Clark out of Alberta, Canada. He's taking on Al Iaquinta from the beautiful state of New York, which I visited over UFC 169. I had a chance to catch up with Al before this fight was announced. Obviously, I had a chance to speak with him before he competed at UFC 169. He's wasting no time already getting his next bout announced, obviously taking on Mitch Clark. And Al, I mean, he trains with some of the best guys in the sport. Obviously, middleweight champion Chris Weidman, training with the likes of Ray Longo and Matt Serra, and so many other guys at that incredible Power Fitness, MMA Fitness gym there. It's unreal. It's a beautiful facility, and of course, when you got guys like Ray Longo there, it's just, and Matt Serra, you're going to be smiling ear to ear, but it's all business whenever it's training camp, and Al Iaquinta joins us right now to talk about his upcoming bout versus Mitch Clark. Al, obviously the recent news of your next opponent, Mitch Clark, was announced. We'll get to that momentarily, but first things first, how goes the battle since your last fight with the likes of Ray Longo and Matt Serra and Chris Weidman and the amazing gym that you guys have over there?
Yeah, we're doing great. Since my fight, we actually had Aljamain Sterling make his UFC debut, and he came away with a unanimous decision victory, so we're definitely in a good spot right now.
Well, I mean, for those that don't know, watching Aljamain compete is an absolute honor because the guy is so explosive. He's very, very, you know, he's not very reluctant. He just gets in there and he starts throwing crazy things and crazy bonds, scrambling and stuff like that. But what was your take on his performance? And at the same time, what advice did you give him beforehand and after?
I just said to go and have fun, man. He trains really hard. So, he also warms up really hard. The kid worked. He warms up for fights longer than anyone I've ever seen. His fight before I'm getting off topic here, but the fight before his UFC fight, I went with him. It was his first fight with our gym. The kid warmed up for the whole day. He woke up in the morning, broke a sweat. We had like a 15-minute drill session. We go back to the room. He's warming up, kicking in the room. He fell asleep somehow for 5-10 minutes, got up, and then started warmed up until the fight. It was like he went through three partners. He warmed up the entire day. So
how does he do this without not burning all that energy before a fight?
I don't know. You know what it is, man? I think it just maybe gets his mind off it, or he just has to get every move in his head right. I don't know. He warms up crazy.
Well,
it was insane. Ray talks about it all the time too. If you ask Ray, it was definitely crazy.
Well, the funny thing is,
what was the question?
Well, no, I mean, talking
what I thought about his fight. His yeah. fight was good, man. He got short notice. He went in there. He did his thing. It was good. He had showed his stand up. He's got some wild kicks he threw and stuff. He's got great grappling and he finished hard. Finally, short notice that last round he was. Well, on the guy, so he's even on short notice, he can get in shape.
Well, at 135 pounds, there's lots of room for him to move up those rankings. Did he say he wants to get in there right away, or does he want to take some time off, enjoy the experience, and then get back in there?
Yeah, I think he was trying to even get on the one in May with Chris's card that I'm fighting on, and I guess he wants to be on there too. So he's back in the gym the following Monday and just training hard, man. I guess he's ready for whenever.
All right, let's talk about your last fight against Kevin Lee. What did you think of your performance?
I thought it was good. I thought the first and the third round were really good. Second round was, I got caught in a bad position and I got stuck there for the round. So it was, I got through it, though, so I'm glad for that, I guess, you know.
Your next fight is going to be against Mitch Clark, a Canadian up here who not many people know of. And I remember when the fight was first announced, it was like, Ally Aquinta's getting Mitch Clark. Shouldn't Ally Aquinta be getting somebody else? I mean, what was your thoughts when he was offered up as an opponent?
Yeah, you know what? I guess that thought kind of went through a couple people's heads. But, it is what it is. He's a tough opponent. And I was just watching a little film on him, actually. He's got some good hands. So I think it's gonna be a good fight. I'm gonna really train my ass off for it, and bring some new tricks to the table. Hopefully,
what's the perfect fight that you want against Mitch Clark to prove something to the UFC that says, okay, you know what, now it's time for me to get some top 10 guys.
I just gotta put it on the whole time, and just be relentless and put him away. Hopefully in the first round. So. I think that's what we're going for this fight, And if it doesn't happen, I'll work my magic for three rounds.
There you go. All right. What's the mood been like at the gym now that Chris Weidman has a new opponent in Lyoto Machida and the whole Vitor Belfort thing is no longer there? Because I remember when I was at the gym talking to yourself and especially Ray and even Matt, that the whole TRT thing came up, but now that is gone. He's got Lyoto Machida next. What's the mood been like at the gym there?
It hasn't really changed much. I guess it's so far out that it's kind of just, it is what it is. Me and Chris were in the gym the last 2 days and we didn't even really talk too much about it. We were too busy training, man. So I think he's just, he's focused on the fight the way it is now and go forward from there. That's it.
And give us one final, before I let you go here, give the people that still give that Chris Weidman victory or the two victories over Anderson Silva, they forget that he's undefeated in his career, but they have that asterisk next to Chris Weidman. What do you say to those people? Because I know what Ray told me, and I know what I see in Chris Weidman, but you still have that segment of the fans and some of the media that say, ah, well, yeah, Chris Weidman might be the champ now, but...
But, yeah, I don't know. You gotta watch the first two. You gotta watch the first two fights, what happened until the end. You know, he was dominating both fights until Anderson Silva goofed off and got knocked out, and until he threw a telegraph kick and, you know, paid for it. So, you know, the endings might have been a little weird, but the events leading up to the ending were just, you know, that's right there. The tail of the tape, that's how it's going to always go, I think.
And what's your take on the fight versus Machida with Chris?
It's going to be an interesting fight. It's going to be cool. I think Chris's wrestling is going to show in that fight. I think he's going to have some tricks on his feet, too. Should be interesting. I'm excited for it.
All right, man, we don't want to take up too much of your time. I want to thank you very much. Get back to what you're doing, and I look forward to seeing you in Vegas, my man.
You got it, man. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
There you have it. Ally Aquinta taking on Mitch Clark, UFC 173 in May. The same card as Chris Weidman taking on Lyoto Machida, who's no longer taking on Vitor Belfort. And if you don't know about the Vitor Belfort situation getting replaced by Lyoto Machida, it came almost immediately after the Nevada State Athletic Commission banned testosterone replacement therapy, or at least therapeutic use exemptions for testosterone replacement therapy. And you know, There's a whole whack of rumors that have been being spread about what happened with Vitor Belfort, and I don't think they've been helped by his lawyer most recently, who's got a different type of positioning that I guess the general public and media are expecting in a situation like this. We all know Vitor Belfort took a random drug test. To my understanding, at least, it was during the MMA Awards that took place in Vegas, but the results did not come out. Next thing you know, he was replaced by Lyoto Machida, and it's almost a coincidence there, but he was sort of asked, you know, did Vitor pass or fail that test? And he said, it doesn't matter. He's unable to do what the athletic commissions are now asking him to do in order to get a therapeutic use exemption. Now, understand that what a person, what a fighter needs to go through to get a therapeutic use exemption. First things first, they have to be off. If they're on TRT already, they have to get off for a certain period of time. And that period of time, I think it was 90 days, up to 90 days or 3 months, something like that. But in that period of time, Vitor would not have been able to do it because he would have to commence it again right when the fight started. So if you do the math, we're in March right now, and you've got April and May, so you've got 3 months to go here. He would have to get off it. And if he needs it during training camp, legitimately, if he needs it during training camp, like he says, it's going to cause big problems for just living in general. So a difficult situation for Vitor Belfort if you look at it from that angle. The other angle is, did he really fail that drug test? We don't know because those results have not been made public. Will they be made public? To my understanding, they will. But I guess right now it's a confidential situation. So it's neither here or there. Lyoto Machida will now step up. He'll replace Vitor Belfort. He will take on Chris Weidman at UFC 173. And of course, Lyoto Machida, Vitor Belfort, both black belts. And speaking of black belts, to get a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a long and arduous journey. The average time, if you look at most sites and most people, it takes about 10 years. 10 years of training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to get your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And there's different reasons why, and what I believe may be different from someone else. But to get a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is no joke, because it's not like it's, you know, people call some of these places Cracker Jack black belts. You know, you can get them in a McDonald's Happy Meal and stuff like that. You know, Chael Sonnen joked about it a long time ago with the Nogueira brothers talking about Anderson Silva. But to get a black belt at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, you have to put in the work. You have to be able to spar. You have to be able to show the techniques. You have to show the understanding. You have to live that sort of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu life, the gentle art. And it's not like getting a black belt in many other martial arts where, you know, you sign up for a year and by the end of the year you may get a black belt or 2 years or whatever. You have to earn a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. These things are not necessarily handed out like candy. It takes a very, very long time. And one guy who's been at it for a very, very long time is Canadian and UFC welterweight veteran Sean Pearson, who was awarded his black belt most recently this week at the Battle Arts Academy in Mississauga, just on the west side of Toronto. First of all, that Battle Arts Academy is absolutely ridiculous. ridiculous. It is unbelievable how beautiful that facility is there. And I had a chance to run into WWE, extraordinaire wrestler Santino Franco, and of course Terry Frendo, who's also one of the owners, as well as Stephen J. Wong. Terry Frendo, if you don't know, is the founder of Inside Fitness Magazine. Stephen J. Wong, the director of The Striking Truth, and I had a chance to meet up with those guys. Had a good time. But Sean was there specifically to train and to teach, and was presented by his black belt by Sam Zakula from Tapstar. It was a very emotional experience for many of us that were there. Not emotional as in crying, but emotional as in, you know what, Sean, congratulations. You put in that work, because take a look at a guy like me, and I'm not getting a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu anytime soon. I mean, the amount of work that would have to go in there, and with this body here that spends more time in a physiotherapy room than does on the mats, I mean, I'm lucky if I can even get the next belt that I'm trying to get, that I've been trying to get for the better part of 10 years, because I'm spending more time away from the mats than on the mats. But I can respect a guy like Sean Pearson, who's put in that time and was accompanied by Justin Bruckman. I was hoping other guys would show up there, but they weren't able to make it. But Justin Bruckman was there, and if you saw my Instagram, which, by the way, at Showdown Joe, Facebook at Showdown Joe, Twitter at Showdown Joe, had the pictures all up there. Justin Bruckman was there tossing Sean Pearson after he was awarded the black belt, as well as Sam Zakula double-legging Sean Pearson, which is the customary thing to do afterwards. You get thrown. Usually there's a gauntlet of the people beating the other guy with the belt, but you have to be a higher level than Sean, and there weren't many black belts there other than the two that were than Sam and Justin that got to throw him. But obviously a very emotional situation for many of us. Adrian Woolley was there as an example, one of Sean's closest friends, and so many other people were there to sit there and know and just watch Sean get his black belt. Very well deserved. And I had a chance to catch up. I spoke with Sean about a variety of topics. Obviously, people want to know, when is he coming back to the Octagon? When is he competing again? And he kind of gave us news as to when he wants to get back, as well as perhaps a change in division. Here is my conversation with the Punisher, Sean Pearson.
All right, here with Sean Pearson, a newly minted and crowned black belt under Sam Zakula. This has been a long time coming, Sean.
Yeah, I know, about 14, 15 years doing BJJ, so yeah, it's been a long time.
In terms of actually getting the black belt, I mean, there's always been talk. Even Sam, before he went out there, said, long time coming, hey, Showdown. Like, that's not my call. That's always the instructor's call. Did you feel you were a black belt earlier, or was it the right time?
I think it's the right time. To be honest with you, I never really focused on the gi I've been doing now. And really, it's going to come when it comes. I always wanted it, but I didn't want to go out there. I didn't want to ask anybody for it. It's just, you know, I've been training with everybody for a long time, and I guess the time's right, and it's a great feeling.
I was going to say, what does it feel like? Because so many people aspire to get that black belt. You finally got it, and you said 14, 15 years to get there. Now that you have it, isn't there a bigger bullseye on your back now?
That's irrelevant. The only bullseye I got on my back is from my son. Well, two sons now. They're going to want to beat the crap out of me. But other than that, it's just, you know, it is what it is. I think I've been maybe this caliber for a long time. But to truly be a black belt, there's a lot of different factors involved, and they just all came together now, and I've got it, so it's great.
So there's Logan, there's Hunter, you got two little guys at the house there. One of them's already playing hockey, one's just born. You've been outside of the Octagon for quite some time. People have asked me, what's the latest on Sean Pearson? Do you have a message to any of the fans out there?
Yeah, hold tight. I think I'm going to try and make the June Vancouver fight happen. I just got to talk with Joe, and we'll see what happens.
Now, there were rumors that you may be fluctuating in weight. Are you staying at welterweight?
No, really, that's a discussion we've been having. 155 was pretty much a lock, but I've got a couple teammates right now that have been sort of trying to steer me in the direction of 170, saying I've been doing real well here. There's no point in going down. So it's a discussion we're ongoingly having. Weight-wise, I can make both.
Now, you're not a young buck anymore. You've got to be in your mid-30s. Hold on. You're in your mid-30s, and cutting down to that weight can't be easy. Is that something you want to go through at this stage in your career?
I don't think anyone ever wants to go through a weight cut. But the truth of the matter is I do what's best for my career and what's best for my family, so I'm going to make the right decision when the time comes.
The stun gun, Dun Young Kim, had a pretty fantastic performance in his last fight this past weekend. He's very confident with his hands right now, but you went the distance with that guy. When you see guys like that excelling in the UFC, how do you feel when you see that?
Believe me, my two losses are Ellenberger and Dun Young Kim, and unless they're fighting one of my boys, I want to see them win all their fights. So it's good for me. I think it's, you know, not anybody realizes it, but the truth is my only two losses are to guys arguably in the top five in the world. So, you know, I don't feel slighted by it. You know, obviously I want both those fights to be wins for me, but I've beaten some great guys, and I've lost to two great guys. But, you know, it's good for me, and I'm glad to see they're doing well.
And with George St. Pierre no longer the champion of the world, the division's wide open. Does the guy like yourself look at that and say, you know what, I can make a run here?
That's a real tough call. I always want to say I can make a run, but the truth is I am in my low 30s, maybe late. But the truth is I take it fight by fight. You know, again, I'm just like everybody else, just struggling out here. But, you know, if the UFC wants to take note, they should give us free memberships to Fight Pass or whatever that's called. that $10 a month is pretty steep for us right now. So maybe some free memberships open for all the UFC guys would be cool. But, I'm just out here having fun, enjoying life.
And, of course, speaking of Fight Pass, Alexander Gustin taking on Jimmy Manoa this weekend, main event in London. You're an analyst. I know you love breaking down fights. And you've got a very good – I mean, we don't always agree, but you know how to break down fights. What are your thoughts on that bout?
Well, it's because you're not always right, Joe. That's really the principle here. I think Gustin takes this fight. He's higher competition, longer reach. I think he's just going to use his boxing skills, much like he did against John Jones. He's going to use those same skills, stay on the outside to win this fight. Manoa is really tough inside, and if he connects, but – I think Gustin's going to be smart. He's coming off fight of his life, and he only wants to go. He sees where he can be, so I think it's just motivating.
Do you think the stars will pan out where we see Gustin emerge victorious versus Manoa and then Johnny beating Glover Teixeira, and we get that rematch that we've been waiting for since Toronto?
I believe so, but I do think Glover and John Jones is an interesting matchup, only because Glover really, no one's really stood and given him the true test yet, so that's an interesting fight that I don't want to call out yet, but I think that Gustin wins this weekend.
There's going to be a new welterweight champ crowned in less than a week and a half. Johnny Hendricks taking on Robbie Lawler. There's somebody else who's going to have George St. Pierre's belt around their waist. What do you make of that fight? Do you have anyone early that you can pick as a winner?
Yeah, I think Hendricks takes that fight. I think stronger wrestling ability. Lefties, a little bit awkward. Lawler's a tough cat. I just think he gets hit a little too much, and it's going to be a problem with Hendricks.
And in my conversation with George St. Pierre, I've been saying the same thing to as many people that will want to listen to me. I don't think he's coming back anytime soon unless things change in mixed martial arts. I'm sure you and I know what we're talking about there. But what are your thoughts on George? You think he returns?
It's a really tough call. I don't think he should return. And that's as a friend of his. As a, you know, as a fan, I want to see him back. But I think he's left his mark in mixed martial arts. His career and his family is all taken care of. I think if the smart move would be to stay away. But, you know, that's what I want to see him do. But, again, you know, as a fan, I'd love to see him back.
Once again, congratulations on the black belt, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
There you have it, Sean Pearson. Make sure you follow Sean online via Twitter, at Sean Pearson. Same thing with his Instagram, at Sean Pearson. If I'm not mistaken, same thing with his Facebook, Sean Pearson. So make sure you follow him, give him some love, like those pictures, because it's so well-deserved for Sean to get that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. And, of course, like he mentioned, he'd love to get on that June card in Vancouver. You know, it'll give him enough time to prepare for any opponent. And we saw what he did with some of the guys, and the guys that he's lost to, Dunyoung Kim and Jake Ellenberger, two top 10 welterweights. So Sean, you know, although, you know, it's very difficult for me to watch Sean's fights because he basically gives me a heart attack when I'm watching him, especially in the third round. But he's a gamer. He's a fighter. He won't quit. He'll just keep going nonstop, and he'll bang with anybody. He doesn't care. He's got great wrestling, and now proven fact, he's got great jiu-jitsu. So he can stand and bang with the best of them. He can go to the ground with the best of them as well. So hopefully he does get that fight in Vancouver in June. And, of course, if it's going to be at lightweight, he'll need some time to cut down there because it's not an easy thing. He says it's an easy thing, and that laugh that you heard in the background was Justin Bruckman and Adrian Woolley. You know, he's going down to 125, by the way. For those that don't know, Adrian Woolley at bantamweight, he's going down to flyweight. This is a tough dude and one of the most, you know, underheralded, underappreciated gems in Canada when it comes to mixed martial arts. So hopefully Adrian Woolley will one day get a chance to compete in the UFC because he definitely deserves it. He's a threat to anyone. He's a great wrestler and can take anybody down at will. He's absolutely fantastic. But it remains to be seen what will happen with Adrian Woolley. And, of course, Sean Pearson, hopefully he does get on that card. Whether at lightweight, hopefully he gets time to cut to 155, or at welterweight. So it all depends on what Sean is able to do. Now, don't forget, this Saturday, 3 p.m. Eastern, Sportsnet 360, the show, the UFC event in London, England. The main card will be shown on Sportsnet 360. The preliminary card will be on UFC Fight Pass. You get to see Cyril Diabaty taking on Ilir Latifi on Fight Pass. Luke Barnett, who's making a lot of noise, taking on Mats Nielsen. Davey Grant from the Ultimate Fighter fame, he's taking on Winnipeg's Roland Delorme at 135 pounds, so it remains to be seen what's going to happen there. Another stud flyweight bout, in my opinion. Two studs, Phil Harris and Louis Gadineau, will be kicking off the Fight Pass card. But the main card will see the return of welterweight Gunnar Nelson as he takes on Omari Akhmedov, and that's going to be a solid fight at 170 pounds because there's a lot of hype around Gunnar Nelson. There always has been, but he's been sidelined with an injury. He's finally back. He's a guy that can make a big run at 170 pounds, especially with that striking style. He gets lots of love from Conor McGregor, who spent a lot of time with, you know, the guy he calls Gunny. A lot of guys call him Gunny, but out of respect, we'll call him Gunnar Nelson until, you know, I'm that type of guy. Until I get permission to call you by your nickname, I ain't calling you by your nickname just yet. So Gunnar Nelson taking on Omari Akhmedov. It's going to be a great scrap at 170 pounds. And, of course, Brad Pickett dropping down to 125 pounds. And speaking of that flyweight division, he's taking it on, speaking of Conor McGregor, another Irish sensation in Neil Siri, who thanked all of the fans out there via Twitter that finally got him a fight within the Ultimate Fighting Championship. That's going to be another solid scrap at 125 pounds. And you got the co-main event between Michael Johnson and Melvin Gillard. That's going to be a spectacular fight. Two guys that have trained together. Michael Johnson obviously having a crazy surge at 155 pounds right now. And Melvin Gillard, the young assassin, always causing havoc when you think about what he does in the octagon. And of course, the main event, Alexander Gustafsson, Jimmy Manoa. Alexander wins this fight. He automatically is in line for that rematch with John Jones, who simply has to get who has to defeat Glover Teixeira. He won't be able to do that simply, in my opinion. But that's the rematch everyone's been talking about. It's a great chance for Jimmy Manoa to prove everybody wrong. And I think even though Jimmy Manoa's giving up 4 inches in height and 4 inches in reach, like I said on UFC Central, a perfect recipe for an overhand right. And of course, he has to stop that crazy footwork by Alexander Gustafsson with that footwork by using lots of leg kicks. I think Alexander does win this fight, but it remains to be seen. Anything can happen. Make sure you tune into Sportsnet 360 this Saturday starting at 3 p.m. Eastern to watch that fight from England. Thank you to everybody on the show, Luke Harris, Mitch Clark, Ally Quint, and of course, Sean Pearson, and to you for listening to UFC Central. You have been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.